Okay, welcome everyone. We're very pleased to have Yunkai Wang, who is a PhD candidate at UIUC, supervised by Virginia Lorenz, Eric Tatambar, and KG Fang, and has worked on quantum sensing, quantum computing, quantum optics, and will tell us about some of these things. And in fact, it looks like the first slide will describe in detail some of those contributions in each of those areas. So Yunkai, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the introduction. This is the outline for my past research. I basically worked on three different subjects on quantum nonlinear optics and quantum imaging. So I listed all the past results I have. And today I'm mainly going to talk about my result on quantum imaging. So I will talk about two aspects of that. One is on fundamental limit, and another is about a practical issue of that. So this is a title of today's talk. It's about quantum enhanced telescoping. Let me first introduce the general setup of our research. So we are considering the astronomical interferometer. Basically, we have an astronomical source, and we have many telescopes which can work together as effectively as a larger aperture. That's based on the so-called Zerning theorem, which states that the coherence function between the two telescopes is a Fourier component of the intensity distribution of the source. So what we want to do is actually measure many Fourier components and then do an inverse Fourier transformation, and then we get an image for the source. So our goal is to consider this problem and think whether we can use some quantum technologies to enhance the measurement, which is already widely used in astronomy. So if we consider the state received by the astronomical interferometer after we post electron getting one photons, this is a state we would receive. As you can see, we have the coherence function g in the qubit state. So that's a qubit state because we have if we consider that for two telescopes, then we simply model that as a spatial mode. And the two spatial mode would receive a state like this. Our goal is to estimate the phase and amplitude of G as good as possible. This is an abstract version of this. We have a source and we do a different type of measurement, consider this for a different purpose. So these are the different scenarios I will talk about one by one. So they are considered for a different purpose, and we will show why we can kind of show some quantum advantage. So this is a talk mainly about quantum sensing. So I think it's useful to first introduce what's the so-called quantum estimation theory. Basically, that gives a lower bound for estimating an unknown parameter. So for example, if we want to estimate phi, which is an unknown parameter, then the variance of that is lower bounded by the so-called phase information, actually the inverse of that. So phase information can be is defined as defined for some unknown parameter, some probe state, and some POVM. And we can calculate that we want to have a larger phase information, which means a better performance. And since that's defined for a particular type of POVM, we can also optimize over all possible POVM. And then that gave us the quantum phase information. So since that's independent of the POVM you choose, so that's kind of a fundamental bound. We will use this theorem a lot in this talk. So let me start from the fundamental aspect of quantum imaging. I will consider in particular the resolution limit of resolving two-point source. So first of all, let me introduce why do we have a resolution limit just as a release limit in a single lens imaging. So actually the reconstructed image for interferometric imaging is, for example, described as I prime x. It's actually the convolution between the original image x and the effective PSF. We have this effective PSF because when we do the inverse Fourier transformation, we actually don't have the we don't sample all the Fourier component we can have. So we only sample part of that. And then when we do the inverse Fourier transformation, we lose some of the information, which actually introduces this effective PSF. And that would actually gives us a resolution limit for the interferometric imaging. And the resolution is roughly determined by the longest baseline of our interferometer. Then the question is, can we avoid the resolution limits? Well, the answer is yes, we can do that by carefully design our measurement. This has been discussed before, but here we consider that in a more general setting of interferometric imaging, and we consider that for a two-point source, which are of amateur strength, it can be very, very strong source. So basically, the main result is shown in this figure. So the x-axis is the separation between two-point source. And if we look at the dashed line, which is the phase information calculated for the conventional method, as you can see, as the separation goes to zero, which means the two-point source are very close to each other, the phase information would vanish. That means since the inverse of phase information is the lower bound for the variance, that means our variance would go to infinity, and that means we basically cannot resolve the two-point source. On the other hand, if you calculate the QFI, which optimize over all possible measurement, you find this is actually a constant. That means we can, if you do your measurement properly, then you can avoid this type of difficulties, which is given in the conventional method. And the second thing I would like to talk about is related to improve the bandwidth extrapolation method. So this is a setup we will consider. Let me first introduce what is a bandwidth extrapolation-based method. So we consider the simplest case when we have a intensity distribution which looks like this. So it have a oscillation in one single frequency. In general, if you consider the image of a general source, you have many free components, and it means the superposition for many oscillation. But here, just for simplicity, we consider this. And since we want to estimate the free components, the amplitude is actually the property we want to estimate for this imaging problem. And if we do a Fourier transformation of that, and we get a spatial spectrum which looks like this, the free component here would become the height of this peak. And if our lens is only have finite size, then we have some cutoff introduced in your measured spectrum. And actually, if the peak is outside the cutoff, then you cannot directly measure the peak of that height. But the idea of a bandwidth extrapolation method says if your source is spatially bounded, then there are always some tiles which is within this cutoff, because your peak is a kind of spread because of you have a spatially bounded source, and you can directly measure the low frequency information and then extrapolate the high frequency information based on that relation. The main problem in this method is that the errors in the estimation of low frequency information will degrade the estimation for high frequency information. And our goal in this result is to see if we can improve the measurement of this. And indeed, we can do that. So here is the setup we considered. Again, we consider the oscillation in actually two spatial frequency. And our goal is to estimate the free component of that actually on the parameters A and B. And we measure that using an interferometric imaging setup, because that's kind of the simple setup we can have. And if you have many detectors, actually infinite of them, and then you can reduce that to a single lens imaging problem. So it includes a single lens imaging as a special case. And this is the main result we showed in this figure. Basically, we calculate the ratio between the QFI and the FI. So the x-axis is alpha, which is the ratio between the size of source and the resolution limits. If we consider the subdiffraction imaging, then that means alpha is a very small number. And as you can see, the ratio between a naive measurement, FI for a naive measurement, and the QFI, which actually vanishes in this case. This means if you design your measurement properly, there is a significant improvement in this case. So in some sense, for this conventional method, if you really do your measurement properly, you can avoid this type of difficulties in some sense. The third thing I would like to talk about for the fundamental aspect is related to the avoid the requirement of prior information for super resolution. Basically, here I will consider a general source and the entangled measurement. So here I will first since we are looking at the imaging of a general extended source, I will first review a result from this paper. I think the first author is the audience today from Dr. Zhou. So basically, since we want to use a quantum estimation theory, first we want to model imaging as a parameter estimation problem. There is a complete set of parameter we can use to actually model a general source, which is so-called moments. Basically, that's an integral of intensity distribution and the spatial coordinate. So U naught is the centroid of your source. So if you consider that in the small source limit, which means alpha, again, the ratio between size of source and resolution limit, if the size of source is very small, then that means alpha is approaching zero, then we expand the density matrix as a series of alpha, you would find xn is the moment is actually the prefactor of this nth order term. And if you just choose your measurement naively, the probability you would get is something like this. So K naught, K1, K2 are just some constant which is related to your density matrix and the QVM you choose. X1, X2 are the moments we want to estimate. Alpha is approaching zero. So for example, if we want to estimate X2, then this lower order term would introduce very, very strong noise. Well, there is a way to avoid these difficulties by construct a measurement. Basically, in this paper, define you can construct a measurement such that k naught k one can be zero. So what we want to consider in this result is actually in their construction, we would need the prior information about your about the centroid, and if you have some errors in the estimation of your centroid, then that would degrade the advantage you claimed in the measurement. And we want to propose a measurement such that the prior information is not required, but we still achieve the same sensitivity. This is kind of inspired by this PIL paper, but they consider that for the single lens case and consider that only for two-point source. We generalize that to interferometric imaging and for the general extended source. So this, let me first introduce that with a very simple example. For example, we want to estimate the first order moment, and then we want to do entanglement. So we have two stellar photons from the lights, from the source, and then we want to project onto this state. One and two labels the two photons we have, A and B labels the two detectors, and we want to project onto actually a Bell state, which looks like this. Since there's no phase or something which is related to any unknown parameter, we can directly implement this without any prior information. And as I promised, there's no zeroth order term like alpha to the order term like which is our there's no zeroth order term, and the leading order term is a scale set alpha. So if you estimate x1, then you can get a great improvement when compared to a naive measurement strategy. So the key observation here is that the two photons must go to two different telescopes, such that the phase because the phase from the source to telescope A and telescope B would be encoded with different phase, and we want to make sure that phase because we don't know that phase, and if you have a two photon go to two different telescopes, each of these terms would have the same phase, so that would become a global phase, So far we are only able to measure x1, which is the first order moment, and we want to extend that to the case when we can measure like nth order moment. That's possible if you have n detector and n photons. But again, we want n photon to go to different telescopes. Then there is a problem in this construction, because in most of the cases, you won't have a photon go to different telescopes. And in this case, you waste lots of events because they go to, for example, two photons go to the same telescope, then you cannot do this type of measurement. Well, there is a solution for that. The idea is basically using the typical set. So the intuition is, this is a classical example. For example, if you flip a coin for 10,000 times, you will very likely get a similar number of heads and tails. For us, if you have an infinite number of photons and finite number of detectors, then you will very likely get equal number of photons at each telescope. And in this case, you can first project into a subspace such as we have an equal number of photons in each telescope. And then you construct the measurement as I showed for the two photon case. It is very simple to generalize that to the case when we have more photon and more detectors. And you can basically that measurement won't require any prior information, but you still achieve the same sensitivity. We have seen entangled measurement can help us avoid requirement for prior information. But another thing I was considering after doing this is entangled measurement is hard to be implemented. Can we have more from entangled measurement? In particular, can we enhance the imaging quality by doing that? Well, indeed, we can do that. This is the fourth topic of fundamental limits. Basically, we find this result by reducing interferometric imaging into a qubit state estimation problem. So let me remind you, we have an astronomical source, and we have assume we have two telescopes, and then we would receive a qubit state. And if you plot that in a block sphere, that the block vector would be within the equator of your block sphere. And since we want to do entangled measurements, we have n copy of identical prepared qubit state, and maybe we have some prior information about the distribution of your source. And we want to have a good estimation of both the phase and amplitude of this state. This has been, in some sense, studied in the quantum, I think, quantum computing, or maybe quantum state estimation problem. This is the main goal there is to maximize the average fidelity of estimating the fourth state. We basically use the result from these two papers. So in this PIA paper and this PIA paper and PIA paper, they show that if you have a optimal separable adaptive measurement, and then this is your average fidelity and the number of photons you use. And on the other hand, if you have optimal collective measurement, this is your average fidelity. So you can say if you are able to do entangled measurement, even compared to the optimal adaptive measurement, there is a constant improvement. So there's always a finite gap between the performance of collective measurement and even the optimal adaptive separable measurement. So the math is done in these two papers. What we claim in this result is that we can then this implies that for imaging, we can also have the similar advantage by doing entangled measurement. So this is our first contribution in this work. The second thing that we find there is a very interesting limit, which is the subdiffraction limit. So in the subdiffraction limit, we mean the size of a source is much smaller than the resolution limit. In this limit for the imaging system, our source is almost like a single point source. And in this case, you would almost receive a pure state. If you receive one photon, that would almost be a pure state. And the amplitude of G would approach one. And then we can describe this using the prior distribution. Basically, this R is the block vector. We assume there is a pole at R equals one to actually describe this prior information. And then we find if you just do a naive fixed separable measurement along the X and Y axis, and of the block sphere, and then this is your average fidelity. You would find say the just some constant, which is independent of n. So you would find because alpha is smaller than zero, the scaling here is worse than one over n. So when compared to the adaptive measurement and the entangled measurement, a very naive fixed separable measurement performs very worse in the very bad in the subdiffraction limit. On the other hand, if you assume alpha is actually zero, so we are not working in the excuse me. And so we are not working in the subdiffraction limit. The alpha is zero, and then if you don't care about the a constant improvement, then you can just fix your measurement. You don't really want to do adaptive measurement. So these are the two results from this work. Then I would like to talk about the second aspect of quantum imaging, which is related to imaging under practical constraints and assumptions, or sometimes I also call it practical issues. The first thing is a generalized version of intensity interferometer. So the motivation for this work is from this paper. So basically in this paper, they claim that if you consider imaging of a weak thermal source, and the mean photon number per temporal mode epsilon is much smaller than one. And then a non-local measurement of information which scales at epsilon, and a local measurement on a single temporal mode that scales at epsilon square. But local and non-local measurement is defined as a case when we either directly bring the light together or we distribute entanglement and then use the entanglement to do some type of measurement. If you write down your PVM, you'll find that's, for example, a projection into a Bell state. So the PVM itself is not separable. But for local measurement, you just do your measurement locally at the two telescope. The PVM is separable in the two parties. And also we want to make sure we do that for a single temporal mode. And by this paper, they show that if the non-local measurement can perform much better than local scheme. But still, although we know non-local measurement has have a better performance, but non-local measurement is harder to be implemented. The question is, can we have a better local scheme, for example, by doing some type of entangled measurement on multiple temporal mode? Well, the answer is partially yes. Well, first of all, this is our proposed setup. We do entangled measurement on two temporal mode together. So basically, we have two temporal mode, and these are two telescopes, and we synchronize the two temporal mode and combine them on beam splitter and do the detection. If you consider the imaging for a weak thermal source, then we still get scaling. The phase information still scales as the epsilon square, although they're bound and not applicable for this case. But you still get the same performance. But the interesting thing is, if you consider that for a subpersonian source, when you have when you don't have a like two photon terms, you get an actual factor in the denominator, which is one minus g. So we have claimed before, so when we consider the imaging in the subdiffraction limit, G would approach one. So in this sense, if you consider a subsonian source, and if you do entangled measurement on two temporal mode, then there is significant improvement by doing this type of entangled measurement. So far, this is the main result we have. There's some question we are unable to answer yet. We are trying to find the answer. The question is, why do we want to really consider subsonic source, which we don't really have in astronomy? We are thinking whether we can actually, for example, using the photon blockade effect, which is implemented locally at each telescope, such as we can change the statistic of your light. And in this way, we can implement a local scheme, which have a much better performance. The question is, you want to implement that and make sure that's implemented locally, and you also want to make sure you don't destroy the coherence between the two telescopes. The second thing I would like to talk about for the practical issues is about the quantum network-based interferometry. So this is an alternative scheme to this paper, this PIL paper. Basically, the motivation is that conventionally, currently in astronomy, in optical interferometer, people would directly, so if you have two telescopes and they both receive some astronomical light, and then we want to conduct the light to one location and directly interfere them, and then do measurement. Of course, you can imagine, because two telescopes can be very far from each other, so that would suffer from the transmission loss. So there is a solution by using the quantum network, and we actually teleport the photon from one location to another location. So here we basically propose a different plan by using, so they consider that in the discrete variable case, but we consider that in the continuous variable case. So instead, we distribute the two modes, instead of distribute a single photon, we distribute the two-mode squeeze state as an entanglement resource, and then we quantify the requirement of the squeezing level used in this type of squeeze state. Basically, why? So our prime is the squeezing level, and we want to make sure y is small enough such that r is usually much smaller than epsilon, then we have an ideal teleportation and ideal performance. Otherwise, at least y should be comparable to epsilon such that we can have a reasonable performance. So basically, this can be regarded as a kind of an alternative scheme, just to zero scheme have some small advantage. And the last thing I would like to talk about is about the decomposition of thermal state into localized pulse. So we have discussed quantum imaging a lot using, for example, we do one, something to localize the pulses and another thing to localize the pulses. But there is an assumption, actually an implicitly assumption, which is used in this kind of discussion, which is that we can really decompose a thermal light into a set of independent pulses, which looks like this. So we can do something to one temporal mode and does not affect another temporal mode. But in general, this is not allowed. If you really want to decompose that as a localized pulses, and then this is what you would get. Actually, there is always some correlation between these pulses, as actually proved in this paper. Does that mean we need to modify all our discussion? Well, in some sense, not. if you can add some reasonable assumption to this result, then this decomposition is allowed. We usually call this assumption the flat spectrum assumption. So here is the idea. If you have, for example, black body radiation, then we add a narrow band filter, then for some part of your spectrum, the spectrum is almost flat. And in this case, you can find that you can have this type of decomposition. So we derive that by starting from a frequency mode and assume they are independent. They are independent. They are, each of them are in a thermal state with mean photon number nm. Since that's a frequency mode, then the wave function is just a plane wave. And then we want to find a spatial mode which are localized, which we basically define that free transformation of this frequency mode. And you can find this wave function, it's a sync function, which is localized. So if you want to, if basically the goal is to find the density matrix in a spatial mode, and you would find in general there these spatial modes are not independent. But if you assume we have some flat spectrum, which means NM is a constant, and then they are actually independent. Indeed, you find they are the direct product state, and each of them are in a thermal state. And in particular, if we consider that in the weak limits and the leading order term would simply be a vacuum state, and the first non-vanishing order term is actually so most of them are vacuum, but there is one term which are single photons. So that would give us a picture we usually use in analysis of this type of imaging problem. So we know there is a photon we would receive, but we don't really know the arrival time, which is exactly described here. So we have a single photon, but we don't know the arrival time of that. Then we lose that information. So it's in a mixed state of all these single photons. Yeah, so that's how I prepared for today's talk. And here are some kind of research interests of myself. I'm interested in doing some quantum computing, like quantum algorithm. I also have some result on quantum algorithm. So near-term quantum computing and quantum error correction. And for quantum sensing, I can imagine many generalization of our previous result. For example, even for the qubit state estimation, we consider that for qubit state, but you can imagine we have more detectors and that's a higher dimension qubit state estimation. And we can consider like a synthetic aperture LiDAR in a quantum version using quantum network, or maybe revisit some free optics result, especially the imaging case. We can consider consider some quantum effect of that. Yeah, so here's a summary of my results. So here's what I will talk about today. But so for this result, I will also have some backup slides. If you are interested, I can also briefly introduce them. With that, I would like to thank you for your attention. And for some question, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, let's thank Yunkai for the talk, and so now we have about 10 minutes for questions on the talk. So if you have a question, please just raise your hand and we'll go in order. Maybe I can get us started. So I was curious about your interest in quantum error correction. Could you, sorry, this is a little bit only has to do with the last slide of the talk, but maybe you could just comment briefly on that.
I would, frankly speaking, I don't really know too much about the quantum error correction at this point. I basically, I certainly read through the textbook, and I know a little bit about the GKP code because I worked a little bit on contents variable quantum computing, especially the amendment-based quantum computing. So I know a little bit about GKP code. That's something I'm interested in to explore a little more during my postdoc.
Okay, thanks. Alex, do you want to go ahead?
I guess I just have a super naive question. So I think maybe at 2 points in the talk, but in particular, when you're talking about these non-Poissonian like photon sources, you were mentioning that when it's like sub-Poissonian or non-Poissonian somehow, I guess you can get some kind of interesting improvements in the sort of measurements you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were suggesting that, you know, for a realistic source, you could somehow say block out part of the source to make it non-Poissonian.
Yeah.
But it seems very counterintuitive that somehow you're going to get some like improvement in your measurement by removing some of the source that's coming in. So I don't know, maybe you can comment on that or.
I guess
like the throwing information away, but.
I guess the intuition is something like this. So what we get for this divergent is because in the calculation of information, you would get some probability which is approaching zero. When the probability is approaching zero, then that would introduce a divergent for the fish information. And if you want to make sure you have a probability which is approaching zero as g goes to one, you must make sure there's no two photon term. If you have two photon term, if you do the calculation, you would find there's actual like one plus g square term. And the part we would want actually exactly cancel out with the contribution from the two photon term. So I guess that's a reason why we want to cut off or get rid of this two photon. And maybe intuitively, I don't have a very, very good intuitive way to interpret this, but weak thermal light, the two photon terms or higher order terms in general, lower order contribution to the probability distribution. So what we consider here usually comes from the first order contribution from the expansion in terms of epsilon. So we keep the single the probability from the single photon term, and we want to kind of get rid of the influence of the two photon term, such that we can have this advantage. Yeah, I hope that kind of answer the question. Okay.
That helps a bit. Yeah, thanks.
Cici, go ahead.
I just want to ask a question about the slides when you talk about the improvement from separable measurement to entangled measurement. So what exactly is the scaling advantage there? Because you only show this separable measurement scaling, and what would be the result for entangled measurement?
For entangled measurement, and when compared to the adaptive separable measurements, the scaling is the same. There's only proved a finite improvement. I would say there is only a constant improvement in terms of the average fidelity. So.
So is this slide about imaging or just like measurement, like state discrimination or something?
It's kind of here, these two sentences are kind of summarize the result from here. It's about the qubit state estimation. It's not really discrimination because we want to actually estimate the whole the full state. Maybe quantum state tomography is more proper to say. But here, like basically, we basically summarize their result, and we claim this also implies some advantage in terms of imaging. I hope that answer a little bit.
Okay, so thanks. I have another question. So.
Mm-hmm.
So you were mentioned you've also worked on like GKB codes and so on. So, can you imagine this type of error correction would be also useful in the quantum imaging scenario?
Quantum imaging scenario. Well, I actually know some of your paper. I would imagine, because when you use a error correction code in quantum sensing, usually when you do the encoding, you along the way of doing that encoding, you want to correct your error. But here, because your probe state, you cannot do something to a probe state because the probe state is really the radiation from the astronomical source. So basically, as long as you receive the state, and then that's all you have. If there is any loss in that process, you cannot do anything to that. So I would imagine. So error correction code would not be very useful, at least for astronomical imaging. On the other hand, quantum imaging is of course a very wide field. In particular, here we only consider the case for astronomical imaging, which you cannot do something to a probe state. But if you, for example, like use a GP code as a prop state, for example, illuminate an object you want to image, probably there can be some advantage you can claim. Because there you can even illuminate that use like a two-mode squid state, such that you can cover effectively shorter wavelengths. But that's not the case we considered in our result here. So hope that's
okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question.
Go ahead, Ray.
If you go back to your slide 23 that Alex asked you about. You mentioned that you get an advantage because of the probability goes to zero, and that's how you are able to kind of pick up the part at the bottom on the left. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you have to measure for much longer? That is, you have a much less probability of getting what you want to have, so you'll have to make your measurement for much longer time to get what you would have got without using that technique?
Yeah, that's a good question. Probably not. This is a guess. I don't really have a direct answer to that, but this is a guess. The reason is I would imagine probably not. The reason is that first of all, fish information is the so-called asymptotic bound. So you need to make sure you have enough samples such that you can approach this bound. So you need to make sure you have enough samples such that you can eventually this bound, approach this bound. So in some sense, you can always say like with the infinite number of photons, we can show there is an advantage when compared to the case when you just do a measurement for a single photon case, or that's one thing. Another thing is the question I guess is how fast can we approach this bound? Well, I have an intuition for that by looking at this. So basically, if you look at the two terms here, this can be regarded as a noise. This can be regarded as a noise since it contains no information, but this can be regarded as a signal. And in the case when we have a G approaching one, then the signal is almost comparable to your noise. Then in most of the cases, you can imagine you approach the asymptotic bound very fast. That's kind of, I have some intuition because I made a lot of calculation, in the previous discussion of this type of model. And I really do the analysis, like a simulation, and show when G is approaching one, and when you want to approach a asymptotic bound, you need lots of samples. G is approaching zero, you need lots of samples. When G is approaching one, you don't need much. So I guess, I hope that's an intuition to kind of answer that question, but that needs to be confirmed.
Yes. And by the way, what was epsilon on that slide?
Epsilon is a mean photon number per temporal mode. Since we are considering the weak thermal source, so epsilon is approaching zero.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you for the question.
Okay. If there isn't another question at this time, we're pretty much at the end.